Chapter 72, The Rebellion of Absalom, David's Son. This chapter is based on 2 Samuel 13-19. "He shall restore fourfold," had been David's unwitting sentence upon himself on listening to the prophet Nathan's parable. Four of his sons must fall, and the loss of each would be a result of the father's sin. The shameful crime of Amnon, the firstborn, was permitted by David to pass unpunished. The law pronounced death upon the adulterer, and the unnatural crime of Amnon made him doubly guilty. But David, self-condemned for his own sin, failed to bring the offender to justice. For 2 years, Absalom, the natural protector of the sister so foully wronged, concealed his purpose of revenge, but at a feast, the drunken, incestuous Amnon was slain by his brother's command. The king's sons, returning in alarm to Jerusalem, revealed to their father that Amnon had been slain. And they lifted up their voice and wept, and the king also and all his servants wept very sore. But Absalom fled. David had neglected the duty of punishing Amnon, and the Lord permitted events to take their natural course. When parents or rulers neglect the duty of punishing iniquity, a train of circumstances will arise which will punish sin with sin. It was here that Absalom's alienation from his father began. David, feeling that Absalom's crime demanded punishment, refused him permission to return. Shut out by his exile from the affairs of the kingdom, Absalom gave himself up to dangerous scheming. At the close of 2 years, Joab determined to effect a reconciliation between father and son. He secured the services of a woman of Tekoa, reputed for wisdom. The woman represented herself to David as a widow whose 2 sons had been her only comfort and support. In a quarrel, one had slain the other, and now the relatives demanded that the survivor be given up to the avenger of blood. "And so," said the mother, "will they quench my coal which is left, and will leave to my husband neither name nor remainder upon the face of the earth?" 2 Samuel 14, verse 7. The king's feelings were touched, and he assured the woman of royal protection for her son. She entreated the king's forbearance, declaring that he had spoken as one at fault, and that he did not fetch home again his banished. "For," she said, "we must needs die, and are as water spilt on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. Neither doth God respect any person, yet doth he devise means that his banished be not expelled from him." This tender and touching portrayal of the love of God toward the sinner is a striking evidence of the familiarity of the Israelites with the great truths of redemption. The king could not resist this appeal. The command was given, "Go therefore, bring the young man Absalom again." The sad results of David's sin. Absalom was permitted to return to Jerusalem, but not to appear at court or to meet his father. Tenderly as he loved this beautiful and gifted son, David felt it necessary that abhorrence for such a crime should be manifested. Absalom lived 2 years in his own house, banished from the court. His sister's presence kept alive the memory of the irreparable wrong she had suffered. In popular estimation, the prince was a hero rather than an offender, and he set himself to gain the hearts of the people. His personal appearance was such as to win the admiration of all. In all Israel, there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. From the sole of his foot, even to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. David's action in permitting him to return to Jerusalem, and yet refusing to admit him to his presence, enlisted in his behalf the sympathies of the people. David was weak and irresolute, when before his sin he had been courageous and decided. This favored the designs of his son. Through the influence of Joab, Absalom was again admitted to his father's presence. He continued his scheming, sedulously courted popular favor, and artfully turned every cause of dissatisfaction to his own advantage. Day by day, this man of noble mien might be seen at the gate of the city, where a crowd of suppliants waited to present their wrongs for redress. Absalom listened, expressing sympathy with their sufferings and regret at the inefficiency of the government. "Oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which hath any suit or cause might come unto me, and I would do him justice." And it was so that when any man came nigh to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand, and took him, and kissed him. Rebellion grows underground. Fomented by the prince, discontent with the government was fast spreading. Absalom was generally regarded as heir to the kingdom, and a desire was kindled that he might occupy the throne. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Yet the king suspected nothing. The princely state which Absalom had assumed was regarded by David as intended to do honor to his court.
Absalom secretly sent picked men throughout the tribes to concert measures for revolt. And now, the cloak of religious devotion was assumed to conceal his traitorous designs. Absalom said to the king, "I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow which I have vowed unto the Lord in Hebron. For thy servant vowed a vow while I abode at Geshur in Syria, saying, If the Lord shall bring me again indeed to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord." The fond father, comforted with this evidence of piety in his son, dismissed him with his blessing. Absalom's crowning act of hypocrisy was designed not only to blind the king, but to establish the confidence of the people, and thus to lead them on to rebellion against the king whom God had chosen. Absalom set forth for Hebron, and with him 200 men out of Jerusalem, that were called, and they went in their simplicity, and they knew not anything. These men went, little thinking that their love for the son was leading them into rebellion against the father. At Hebron, Absalom summoned Ahithophel, a man in high repute for wisdom. Ahithophel's support made the cause of Absalom appear certain of success, attracting to his standard many influential men. As the trumpet of revolt sounded, the prince's spies throughout the country spread the tidings that Absalom was king, and many of the people gathered to him. David finally aroused. Meanwhile, the alarm was carried to Jerusalem. David was suddenly aroused to see rebellion breaking out close beside his throne. His own son had been plotting to seize his crown and doubtless take his life. In his great peril, David shook off the depression that had long rested upon him and prepared to meet this terrible emergency. Absalom was only 20 miles away. The rebels would soon be at the gates of Jerusalem. David shuddered at the thought of exposing his capital to carnage and devastation. Should he permit Jerusalem to be deluged with blood? His decision was taken. He would leave Jerusalem and then test his people, giving them opportunity to rally to his support. It was his duty to God and to his people to maintain the authority with which heaven had invested him. In humility and sorrow, David passed out of the gate of Jerusalem. The people followed in long, sad procession, like a funeral train. David's bodyguard of Cherethites, Pelethites, and Gittites, under the command of Ittai, accompanied the king. But David, with characteristic unselfishness, could not consent that these strangers should be involved in his calamity. Then said the king to Ittai, "Wherefore goest thou also with us? Thou art a stranger, and also an exile. Whereas thou camest but yesterday, should I this day make thee go up and down with us? Seeing I go whither I may, return thou, and take back thy brethren. Mercy and truth be with thee." Ittai answered, "As the Lord liveth, and as my lord the king liveth, surely in what place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also will thy servant be." These men had been converted from paganism, and nobly they now proved their fidelity to God and their king. David accepted their devotion to his apparently sinking cause, and all passed over the brook Kidron toward the wilderness. Some are loyal to David in the crisis. Again the procession halted. And lo, Zadok also, and all the Levites were with him, bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God. The presence of that sacred symbol was to the followers of David a pledge of deliverance and victory. Its absence from Jerusalem would bring terror to the adherents of Absalom. At sight of the ark, joy and hope for a brief moment thrilled the heart of David. But soon other thoughts came. As the appointed ruler of God's heritage, the glory of God and the good of his people were to be uppermost in his mind. God had said of Jerusalem, "This is my rest," Psalm 132, verse 14. And neither priest nor king had a right to remove therefrom the symbol of his presence. And David's great sin was ever before him. It was not for him to remove from the capital of the nation the sacred statutes which embodied the will of their divine sovereign, the constitution of the realm, and the foundation of its prosperity. He commanded Zadok, "Carry back the ark of God into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again, and show me both it and his habitation. But if he thus say, 'I have no delight in thee,' behold, here am I, let him do to me as seemeth good unto him." When all looks dark, David prays. As the priests turned back toward Jerusalem, a deep shadow fell upon the departing throng. Their king, a fugitive, themselves outcasts, forsaken even by the ark of God. The future was dark. And David went up by the ascent of Olivet, and wept as he went up, and had his head covered, and he went barefoot. And all the people that was with him covered every man his head, and they went up, weeping as they went up. And one told David, saying, "Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom." Again, David was forced to recognize the results of his own sin. The defection of Ahithophel, the ablest of political leaders, was prompted by revenge for the wrong to Bathsheba, his granddaughter. And David said, "O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness." Upon reaching the top of the mount, the king bowed in prayer, casting upon God the burden of his soul and humbly supplicating divine mercy. Hushai the Archite, a wise and able counselor, a faithful friend to David, now came to cast in his fortunes with the dethroned and fugitive king. David saw, as by a divine enlightenment, that this man was the one needed to serve the interests of the king in the councils at the capital. At David's request, Hushai returned to Jerusalem to offer his services to Absalom and defeat the crafty counsel of Ahithophel. With this gleam of light in the darkness, the king and his followers pursued their way down the eastern slope of Olivet, through a rocky and desolate waste toward the Jordan. And when King David came to Bahurim, behold, thence came out a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. And he cast stones at David and at all the servants of King David. And thus said Shimei when he cursed, "Come out, come out, thou bloody man, and thou man of Belial. The Lord hath returned upon thee all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose stead thou hast reigned. And the Lord hath delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom thy son. And behold, thou art taken in thy mischief, because thou art a bloody man." In David's prosperity, Shimei had not shown that he was not loyal. He had honored David upon his throne, but cursed him in his humiliation. Inspired by Satan, he wreaked his hatred upon him whom God had chastened. David had not been guilty of wrong toward Saul or his house. Much of his life had been spent amid scenes of violence, but of all who have passed through such an ordeal, few have been so little affected by its hardening, demoralizing influence as was David. David's nephew, Abishai, could not listen patiently to Shimei's insulting words. "Why," he exclaimed, "should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over, I pray thee, and take off his head." But the king forbade him. "Behold," he said, "my son seeketh my life. How much more now may this Benjamite do it? Let him alone, and let him curse, for the Lord hath bidden him. It may be that the Lord will look on mine affliction, and that the Lord will requite me good for his cursing this day." David knows this trouble is the consequence of his sin. While his faithful subjects wondered at his sudden reverse of fortune, it was no mystery to the king. He had often had forebodings of an hour like this. He had wondered that God had so long borne with his sins, and now, in his hurried and sorrowful flight, he thought of his loved capital, the place which had been the scene of his sin. As he remembered the long suffering of God, he felt that the Lord would still deal with him in mercy. David had confessed his sin and had sought to do his duty as a faithful servant of God. He had labored for the upbuilding of his kingdom. He had gathered stores of material for the building of the house of God. And now must the results of years of consecrated toil pass into the hands of his reckless, traitorous son? He saw in his own sin the cause of his trouble, and the Lord did not forsake David. Under cruel wrong and insult, he showed himself humble, unselfish, generous, and submissive. Never was the ruler of Israel more truly great in the sight of heaven than at this hour of his deepest humiliation. In the experience through which he caused David to pass, the Lord shows that he cannot tolerate or excuse sin. David's history enables us to trace, even through darkest judgments, the working out of his purpose of mercy. He caused David to pass under the rod, but he did not destroy him. The furnace is to purify, not to consume. God does not give Absalom wisdom. Soon after David left Jerusalem, Absalom and his army took possession of the stronghold of Israel. Hushai was among the first to greet the new crowned monarch, and the prince was gratified at the accession of his father's old friend and counselor. Absalom was confident of success. Eager to secure the confidence of the nation, he welcomed Hushai to his court. Absalom was surrounded by a large force, but it was mostly composed of men untrained for war. Ahithophel well knew that a large part of the nation were still true to David. He was surrounded by tried warriors, commanded by able and experienced generals. Ahithophel knew that after the first burst of enthusiasm in favor of the new king, a reaction would come. Should the rebellion fail, Absalom might secure a reconciliation with his father. Then, Ahithophel, as his chief counselor, would be held most guilty. Upon him the heaviest punishment would fall. To prevent Absalom from retracing his steps, Ahithophel counseled an act that would make reconciliation impossible. With hellish cunning, this unprincipled statesman urged Absalom to add the crime of incest to that of rebellion. In the sight of all Israel, he was to take to himself his father's concubines, thus declaring that he succeeded to his father's throne. And Absalom carried out the vile suggestion. Thus was fulfilled the word of God to David by the prophet, "Behold, I will raise up evil against thee out of thine own house, and I will take thy wives before thine eyes, and give them unto thy neighbor. For thou didst it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun." 2 Samuel 12, verse 11, 12. Not that God prompted these acts, but he did not exercise his power to prevent them. Ahithophel was destitute of divine enlightenment, or he could not have based the success of treason on the crime of incest. Men of corrupt hearts plot wickedness, as if there were no overruling providence to cross their designs. Having succeeded in securing his own safety, Ahithophel urged, "Let me now choose out 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue after David this night, and I will come upon him while he is weary and weak-handed, and will make him afraid. And all the people that are with him shall flee, and I will smite the king only, and will bring back all the people unto thee." Had this plan been followed, David would surely have been slain. But the Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel, to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. Hushai had not been called to the council, but after the assembly had dispersed, Absalom, who had a high regard for the judgment of his father's counselor, submitted to him the plan of Ahithophel. Hushai saw that if the plan were followed, David would be lost. He said, "The counsel that Ahithophel hath given is not good at this time. For," said Hushai, "thou knowest thy father and his men, that they be mighty men, and they be chafed in their minds, as a bear robbed of her whelps in the field. And thy father is a man of war, and will not lodge with the people. Behold, he is hid now in some pit, or in some other place. If Absalom's forces should pursue David, they would not capture the king, and should they suffer a reverse, it would dishearten them and work great harm to Absalom's cause. For," he said, "all Israel knoweth that thy father is a mighty man, and they which be with him are valiant men." Hushai suggests alternate plan. He suggested a plan attractive to a vain and selfish nature. "I counsel that all Israel be generally gathered together unto thee, from Dan even to Beersheba, as the sand that is by the sea for multitude, and that thou go to battle in thine own person. So shall we come upon him in some place where he shall be found, and we will light upon him as the dew falleth on the ground. And of him, and of all the men that are with him, there shall not be left so much as one. Moreover, if he be gotten into a city, then shall all Israel bring ropes to that city, and we will draw it into the river, until there be not one small stone found there." And Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. But there was one who clearly foresaw the result of this fatal mistake of Absalom's. Ahithophel knew that the cause of the rebels was lost, and he knew that whatever might be the fate of the prince, there was no hope for the counselor who had instigated his greatest crimes. Ahithophel had encouraged Absalom in rebellion. He had counseled him to the most abominable wickedness, to the dishonor of his father. He had advised the slaying of David. He had cut off the last possibility of his own reconciliation with the king, and now another was preferred before him by Absalom. Jealous, angry, and desperate, Ahithophel gat him home to his house, and hanged himself and died. Such was the result of the wisdom of one who did not make God his counselor. Hushai lost no time in warning David to escape beyond Jordan without delay. Lodge not this night in the plains of the wilderness, but speedily pass over, lest the king be swallowed up, and all the people that are with him. David, spent with toil and grief after that first day of flight, received the message that he must cross the Jordan that night, for his son was seeking his life. What were the feelings of the father and king in this terrible peril? In the hour of his darkest trial, David's heart was stayed upon God, and he sang, "Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God. But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory, and the lifter up of mine head. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. I laid me down and slept. I awaked, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about." Psalm 3, verse 1 to 6. David and all his company, in the darkness of night, crossed the deep, swift-flowing river. By the morning light there lacked not one of them that was not gone over Jordan. David and his forces fell back to Mahanaim, which had been the royal seat of Ishbosheth, a strongly fortified city surrounded by a mountainous district favorable for retreat in case of war. The country was well provisioned, and the people were friendly to David. Absalom, the rash and impetuous prince, soon set out in pursuit of his father. His army was large, but it was undisciplined and poorly prepared to cope with the tried soldiers of his father. David divided his forces into three battalions under the command of Joab, Abishai, and Ittai. The battle that defeated the rebellion. From the walls of Mahanaim, the long lines of the rebel army were in full view. The usurper was accompanied by a vast host, in comparison with which David's force seemed but a handful. As the army filed out from the city gates, David encouraged his faithful soldiers, bidding them go forth trusting that the God of Israel would give them victory. But as Joab, leading the column, passed his king, the conqueror of 100 battlefields stooped his proud head to hear the monarch's last message. "Deal gently for my sake with the young man, even with Absalom." And Abishai and Ittai received the same charge. But the king's solicitude, seeming to declare Absalom dearer to him than the subjects faithful to his throne, only increased the indignation of the soldiers against the unnatural son. The place of battle was a wood near the Jordan. Among the thickets and marshes of the forest, the great numbers of undisciplined troops of Absalom's army became confused and unmanageable. And the people of Israel were slain before the servants of David, and there was a great slaughter that day of 20,000 men. Absalom, seeing that the day was lost, had turned to flee when his head was caught between the branches of a wide-spreading tree, and, his mule going out from under him, was left hopelessly suspended, a prey to his enemies. He was found by a soldier, who spared Absalom, but reported to Joab what he had seen. Joab was restrained by no scruples. He had befriended Absalom, having twice secured his reconciliation with David, and the trust had been shamelessly betrayed. But for the advantages gained by Absalom through Joab, this rebellion could never have occurred. And he took three darts in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom. And they took Absalom and cast him into a great pit in the wood, and laid a very great heap of stones upon him. God's judgment on the rebellion. Thus perished the instigators of rebellion in Israel. Ahithophel had died by his own hand. The princely Absalom, whose beauty had been the pride of Israel, had been cut down in his youth, his dead body thrust into a pit and covered with a heap of stones, in token of everlasting reproach. The leader of the rebellion being slain, two messengers were at once dispatched to bear the tidings to the king. The second messenger came, crying, "Tidings, my lord the king, for the Lord hath avenged thee this day of all them that rose up against thee." From the father's lips came the question, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" Unable to conceal the heavy tidings, the herald answered, "The enemies of my lord the king, and all that rise against thee to do thee hurt, be as that young man is." David questioned no further, but with bowed head went up to the chamber over the gate, and wept. And as he went, thus he said, "O my son Absalom! My son Absalom! Would God I had died for thee, O Absalom, my son, my son!" The victorious army approached the city, their shouts of triumph awaking the echoes of the hills. But as they entered the city gate, the shout died away, their banners drooped in their hands, for the king was not waiting to bid them welcome. From the chamber above the gate, his wailing cry was heard, "O my son Absalom! My son Absalom! Would God I had died for thee, O Absalom, my son!" Joab was filled with indignation. God had given them reason for triumph and gladness. The greatest rebellion ever known in Israel had been crushed. Yet this great victory was turned to mourning for him whose crime had cost the blood of thousands of brave men. The rude, blunt captain pushed his way into the presence of the king and boldly said, "Thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved thy life, and the lives of thy sons and of thy daughters, in that thou lovest thine enemies and hatest thy friends. For thou hast declared this day that thou regarded neither princes nor servants. For this day I perceive that if Absalom had lived, and all we had died this day, then it had pleased thee well. Now therefore arise, go forth, and speak comfortably unto thy servants. For I swear by the Lord, if thou go not forth, there will not tarry one with thee this night. And that will be worse unto thee than all the evil that befell thee from thy youth until now." Harsh and cruel as was the reproof, David did not resent it. Seeing that his general was right, he went down to the gate, and with words of commendation greeted his brave soldiers as they marched past him.